You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Fortune tanto vulnera, si latibus obselis, potsu amici vulnera, sutra imprepelis.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Well, this is not radio slash TV for lightweights, folks. Serafin is extremely smart. His brain moves very quickly. I can barely keep track of it. And so it's my job to try to dial him in, but then I'm also moves just almost as fast. So it's kind of creates an atomic reaction to stick us together here like uranium and plutonium. But I want to get into Lee Zeldin, who overall I think has a pretty good pass, pretty good instincts, are saying maybe he's a replacement. It doesn't look good. I don't see Todd Blanche being brought in and leaving. We'll look at that. Saravin's going to ride shotgun with us into the next hour. I've cleared the decks of even another guest so we can do this because it is important as a microcosm of how this operates to look at Bongino and play this audio of him, which I told Serafin over a year ago, did a phone call with me, similar to this, but not hyperventilating, cussing at me, threatening me. And I'm just like, dude, I mean, come on, man. You're not 8 years old. You know, we're not in fifth grade here, which just goes to the psychology of the people that were in there and how it ties into everything else and where this is going. But let's get back to this Capitol police officer who the researchers and folks looked at, who you staked out next to her house in the terror investigation, and the house next door to her with this other Capitol police officer. You didn't know why you were there. You were there. I mean, the weirdness of that. And notice they never challenged that was the case. You did that in counterterrorism. And then them upping up everything on J6 because of the pipe bombs that we always heard were inert. Now we've confirmed the poor black autistic guy that was a food delivery guy, your DoorDash delivery person. You were the first to break that it was miles away in their track on his food delivery. That's now come out. So the boldness, the recklessness of not just covering this up, we're not saying it's her, but certainly not the black man, Mr. Cole, it's so reckless. And so now you're saying, and you're a guy that has, I never seen one of your predictions not come true. Okay. You don't make a ton of them, but your analysis of what's about to come out has always been on. You're saying you think she's in danger. And the first thing I thought when I saw this yesterday is if they can't contain this, it'll bring down the whole J6, Bill Barr, Pelosi, it's already been exposed to operation, and the feds being fake arrested and being handcuffed and high-fived and all that, and the FBI director lying about no feds there, and it was, you know, hundreds of them, obviously. We've already seen it in an Antifa's auxiliary, putting MAGA gear on over it. This brings it all down. So this isn't a side issue. This is a central issue. And now we learn the FBI, and go through all this, because I've studied polygraphs, it's so interesting, but not like you and the experts you've talked to in the Defense Department and FBI. But I know that's true. It's how you act before, during, and after. All of it, these are very accurate when it's a good person doing it, it's in their background research. And it's how she was so well-trained for the deception is why she didn't just fail on the graph, she failed in the real test. And so this is so huge. And again, CIA after? Yeah, right, folks. They got agents in place all over. And with her whole background and the rest of it. So I agree with you that she is in Seth Rich territory, and mm-hmm. It's important to talk about that so they don't kill her, because they've done everything they can to intimidate people, threaten lawsuits, all sorts of other weird deaths, like you said. So start over slowly, like we're 5 years old and not a counterterrorism FBI agent, former agent like you, and explain what the angles of this and what happened.
On January 5th of 2021, a person wearing a hoodie spent about 40 minutes on camera, on and off, starting at about 7:30, going to about 8:30 in that range, and delivered two devices that looked very much like bombs, but I was briefed, were not bombs in the Capitol area. One was at roughly the RNC. The other was at roughly the DNC. Those are the RNC and the DNC bombs. They were recovered by Capitol Police officers. One was after a tip from a woman who worked for a cell phone company called FirstNet. I'm not sure that that's all that relevant, but that was the story. They set up a minimum safe and a cordon, and then they went looking for others. They found the other bomb in about 11 and a half minutes, a little bit less than that, and then never looked for another bomb again, which has raised questions by me
and people around. And on the footage, like bloodhounds, they go right to where it's at.
They went directly to it. This was all uncovered because of internet researchers that are available and also from the people that were previously at the Blaze, but I believe have probably been fired. I don't have like 100% confirmation on it, but they've removed Blaze from their bios. Steve Baker and Joe Hanneman followed this story all the way to the end. That was in January of 2021. The second week of January 21, or just the week after that, on the 13th, I believe, in the 14th of January 2021, I, as part of a surveillance team with the FBI, as an FBI agent working for the Washington field office, was stationed to watch a home, and we were trying to pattern the life of a person of interest, I think afterwards known as Person of Interest 3, who ends up probably not having anything to do with anything, but lived directly next door to a person that was discovered by the Blaze, matched a forensic gait analysis and a bunch of other sort of interesting circumstantial indications that a Capitol Police officer lived directly next door to where I was.
Go back a minute. Mm-hmm. I know you don't know and you've said, but you're a smart guy. What are the chances out of D.C. that you're put in a pipe bomb J6 investigation looking at another Capitol cop next door to her? What are the chances of that, and what do you think that was about? Or do they have a geolocation from, but they could check the name on it. Why would it
there be? There were a lot of reasons. Yeah, Alex, there's a lot of reasons why we were there, and that case has been litigated very, very aggressively. In fact, the guys at the Blaze ran this thing down. We're still not 100% sure what it is, but the odds of me showing up and looking at a door as an FBI agent, and then the person being alleged to have matched forensically to the actual subject being next door, it's just two random houses being right next to each other in Washington, D.C. is one in roughly 6 trillion. So it's an astronomically low percentage chance that we randomly ended up in the wrong place.
So do you think FBI was using Palantir or something and it just kind of misidentified?
I don't think so. So there were three persons of interest. Person of interest one was the person wearing the hoodie. That's the person that's on the screen with me right now. Person of interest two was a person that did some really illogical things, took some pictures in a alleyway, and then also took another picture that was roughly in the same vicinity of the different bomb. So that was really strange. And then person of interest three was the owner of the home directly next door to Shawnee Kirkhoff, who was the Capitol Police officer that was implicated by the Blaze, and then also has been outed in this filing that just came out yesterday.
So again, what are the chances you have another Capitol Police officer right next to suspect?
Well, you're close, but you're not quite on. So the person that we looked at was actually a guy that worked for a different government agency, and I don't think he was involved in anything. He had a house guest that he hadn't seen in something like 30 or 50 years come in and stay with him. That guy had some very interesting connections to some overseas ministries and maybe some CIA. Shady IA. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the implication from what I've heard. We don't have a hard link to it, but it's possible.
And now she's CIA.
Yeah, exactly. And then the person next door was Shawnee Kirkhoff and a guy named Dan Dickert. And Dan Dickert was a Capitol Police officer as well, her boyfriend. So you had two Capitol Police officers living in the door directly next to, about 5 feet away from the door that I was watching. And we were watching people. We don't know what the connection is still. It's actually still not been explained, but it's really, really bizarre. And like I said, it's six trillion to one that you would end up two random doors next to each other of interest.
Well, what about
the
this?
Same
you
case.
Got the floor on this, but just so I understand this, to the FBI's credit, they go interrogate her, do a polygraph. She fails it. You'll get into that.
Oh, it's really bad, actually.
So let's do it. Go ahead.
All right. So the case is cold. The FBI runs down all the forensics they can do. They go and they dump all kinds of cash register receipts. They're doing, they're looking through thousands and thousands of purchase history for very specific types of devices that were found on the pipe bomb, allegedly, which they claim was a viable device, but that's not a thing that we do. They either say it functioned or would have functioned as designed, or it was inert. They didn't give either of those. They claim viability. That's not a thing that we usually do in the bomb world. So all that's kind of really bizarre. Basically, the case is cold. They ran down a bunch of subjects. They found somebody they tried to do some gait analysis on because the pipe bomber on the video with the hoodie has a very specific right leg limp. And they tried to find a guy
AI,
who had a right leg limp.
It was like 98% accurate tracking how people walk like a fingerprint.
That's what Baker's analysis found. That's what the Blaze originally published that they've since retracted. But they actually, the FBI, and there's a story from the Washington Post acknowledging that early on in the first few months of 2021, they actually ran down a guy who had a specific limp. They saw him at a gym. He had the right kind of shoes. So they were trying to figure out if he was it. He was ruled out. They kept ruling out subject after subject after subject.
But now, here's where it gets AI, really. That looks like a woman's hips and a woman.
Everyone says so. Yeah. And by the way, there's way more damning footage of that. And maybe that will come out very soon. There's a lot of footage and it's very, very indicative of what we think is going on here. So broadly speaking, years of cold case, Years of no answer. FBI takes it from $25,000 to $50,000 to $100,000 to $250,000 to $500,000 rewards. All of that indicates that you can't claim this was a training event that the government already knew about, because now you've got the FBI actively, theoretically moving an investigation. If they wanted to claim it was a training event, the time to do that was many, many years ago. I think that they wanted to do that, though. I think that me and my friends actually debunked this story. We had Joe Hanneman, who was formerly with The Blaze, said those things as much. We said, you can't explain it away as a training exercise.
Is that a black guy or a woman? Back that up. Everybody, is that a woman?
Well, here's the other thing that's on top of that, Alex.
Yeah, go ahead.
There were two people that actually walked by the pipe bomber on that night and claimed that it was a white male or a white person that was behind that mask. And so we're seeing a night vision footage. So this is color, you know, not color corrected. It's actually done in like infrared. But
look at the shoulders and hips. It's a woman.
The funniest thing about all that stuff is that this is deliberately degraded video to 1 frame per second, which is why it's so choppy and jumpy. The FBI changed the aspect ratio and they changed the frame rate to make it crap video so that nobody could analyze it, which leads me to believe the FBI is part of the cover-up, even though I don't think they did the planning of this. And I'll give you a unified theory of it in a minute. But long and short, we go for about 5 years with no stories. Steve Baker, doing a bunch of work on use of force on January 6th. He was a January 6th reporter for The Blaze. He was a J6er himself. He was arrested by the FBI. And he pointed out on November the 4th that Shawnee Kirkoff was a Capitol Police officer on January 6th who was firing pepper balls in a way that he thought was probably incompatible with less than lethal force, and was actually lethal force, firing at heads and above the shoulders, which is not allowed. It's an illegal use of that technology if you're not actually justified to use it in a lethal way. So that's where this kind of starts. But before that, sometime in September and October, he had brought his findings that he believed that Shawnee Kirkoff, who, you know, is 5'7" and was a Capitol Police officer and was in the proximity and fit all the dimensions of, let's say, I don't know, Dan Bongino's parameters for someone who would have placed the pipe bombs before Dan became an FBI guy. We had this story that he brought to DHS and ODNI, as I understand it, and they started looking into it. There was a freakout that happened in the intelligence community, and somebody at ODNI, Tulsi Gabbard's organization, leaked it over to John Rathkit's organization at the CIA, and the CIA panicked because she currently worked at the CIA at that time. This is when everything kind of spins out of control. November 4th, The Blaze releases a story talking about less than lethal force. This is Baker and Hanneman saying Shawnee Kirkoff shot people in the face with a pepperball gun, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. On November the 6th, per court filings, you guys can go and pull that up. It's document number 58, and that was filed yesterday. We find out that on November the 6th, the FBI did an interview with her, a subject interview, an investigative interview, and they also did a polygraph, which is not always common. In fact, I don't think I've ever done a polygraph of a subject. But when you're in the intelligence community and you hold a top secret clearance, people get polygraphed occasionally when you might be a security risk. She failed the polygraph, which is also known as deception indicated is the way that they actually phrase it. It's not a fail per se. Deception is indicated. And there were two very relevant questions that they cite in this court filing. We're taking the attorney's word. I don't think they would get disbarred by filing things that were untrue from the discovery. Question number one was, quote, I'm actually going to go to it here. So yet on the screen, but I'll go to it myself.
Yeah, punch it up. Take again, control of the feed if you want. Just put it on the screen.
Well, let me just. Yeah, you've got it on there. I'm just going to read it on my side. You guys had it actually on your desk, or you had it on the screen perfectly. This is in, it's page number one of the filing. It's at the bottom there, November 6th. She's interviewed. Two relevant questions. Number one, did you place those pipe bombs? Direct quote. And then the second one, number two, did you place those pipe bombs that evening? She failed the polygraph. That's a conventional way of saying something, which is that she indicated deception. The polygraph examiner also noted, this is relevant, quote, a very controlled reaction to the news of her failing the polygraph and seemingly rehearsed responses to the examiner's question. Now, the context for that is as follows. Alex, when you take a polygraph examination in the federal space and you want to get a security clearance, you don't really learn this when you're working on it. But I found out after the fact, having talked to polygraphers, the polygraph starts the minute you walk in the door. And that the machine and the blood pressure and the measurement of respirations and the little things that measure how much you're perspirating on or perspiring on your fingers and the little sensors under your butt cheeks and the things they put under your toes, all that stuff, those are props. They're the machine. They give you a physiological response, but they're not the actual polygraph. The polygraph is done by the examiner. They ask you questions before, after, and during
exactly.
The time that you're on the machine.
The human is the real examiner.
That's the examiner, correct. And so their
it's
relevant
like
understanding
Blade
of what
Runner,
you're doing.
The machine doesn't matter. It's what they're watching. And like you said, she did a very professional, they said, well-trained, prepared, which CIA.
Now, look, she, She might have just done it on instinct. When I was there, they actually did the same thing to me. So I went through my polygraph with the FBI. It's called a full scope poly. That means that they're going to do a lifestyle poly, which is like, how did you live? Did you ever cheat academically? And then a CI poly, which includes things like marital infidelity and your money and other things like that. And, you know, foreign contacts. So I had a full scope poly when I went through the FBI. They asked me a couple questions about lifestyle. And at the end, they finish it. They take the meter off you. They pulled my little, you know, chest strap off. And the guy goes, look, you did pretty okay on it. You just had some basic deception indicated, or maybe some inconclusives talking about academic dishonesty. So you probably just cheated on a Latin test when you were in high school or something. That's what the guy actually said to me. I still remember it. That was in 2015. And I looked him dead in the eye and I go, you know, I never cheated 7.5 GPA because I would never cheat off anybody. I'm so arrogant, I'd actually rather write my own answers even if I didn't go to class. No, I never cheated on anything. So that's the right answer. I did not go back on any statement I made. And so they look at it and they go, okay, well, you know, whatever the answer was that they were looking for, they're gauging me. Am I going to say something that's contradictory to my previous answers? So what they do is they give you a list of questions. They ask you, have you ever committed a crime that you got away with? Yes. Okay. What crimes were they? I sped excessively. I broke into a building when I was a kid. I did this. And these are all my answers, right? So they were all on file. And then they go, did you ever commit a crime that you didn't list on this thing? And I go, no. And they go, great. So then they go and they put you on the machine, they ask you the questions, and then they do some follow-up where they might try to jam you up on something. She continued to do the right thing and answered in a controlled manner. That could mean that she was coached. It could mean that it was true, but she had a physiological response to a question that doesn't make any sense to have a physiological response to, and that is, did you place those pipe bombs? Alex, I don't know how many times you've driven a Ferrari, but I've never driven a Ferrari. I've also never driven or stolen an F-16. If you came to me and we found out that there was a missing F-16 out there in the world, like the meme song that's all over Instagram.
I have no anxiety saying I didn't steal it.
Exactly. They'd go, Seraphim, did you steal that F-16? And it's like, no, because I've never even touched
an
F-16.
Well, if I was the interviewer for a job, I'd say, you already know all this stuff. If you want me for the mission, if I accept the mission, I'll do it. Let's just end the interview now because I'm not going to answer your questions. So
yeah, and they're not going to hire you because you said that. So anyway, it's a yes or no thing, and it's real simple. Did you place those pipe bombs? No, and you have a reaction. Did you place those pipe bombs this evening? No, and you have a physiological reaction. It means something. Now, it doesn't mean that you're guilty. It means you had a reaction to it. I don't know why. Maybe your boyfriend did. Maybe your family member did. Maybe someone told you about it and they were guilty and you feel bad for them. There's a lot of reasons why you can fail a polygraph and have a reaction. What doesn't happen is you don't discontinue the investigation.
She double failed. She failed the physical.
She failed on two questions.
And the assessment.
And then the assessment afterwards, the polygraph examiner thought she was practiced. So that's a contradicted technique.
I wonder.
And then the last part of it is,
oh, the CIA.
Well, here's the worst part of it. The FBI apparently stopped investigating her after that. And that's not what happens. They don't shut down an investigation.
So were they just trying to get dirt on her to suppress her later for the cover up?
I don't think so. So here's what we read in the piece. You guys can actually scan down a little bit further on that document. On November the 7th, 5 days after the FBI opened a file on Mr. Cole, or 5 days before they started investigating Mr. Cole, on November 7th, they named her a person of interest. So you fail the polygraph. The next day, the FBI opens up a subfile on you under person of interest. This is the way that it was exported in discovery, as far as I can understand it. That's my experience with working on the FBI's file system. There'd be a subfile of like POIs. Person of interest. So then you have the government immediately does subpoenas. These are logical investigative steps. They did preservation requests for numerous electronic accounts and so on. They asked for certain things from her, and they asked for things from her, let's say, phone provider and so on and so forth. And then on November 12th, the same day that the government opened the investigation into Mr. Cole, they actually brought her in for another interview. Mr. Dickert, her.
So listen, it's great you're going through all the minutia and it's fascinating, but we got a lot of cover other than this.
Yep, we're
going
to keep going.
What
all
does
I want
this
you to know
mean,
is
though,
on
that,
the 12th,
that this has come out now and that Mr. Cole's defense knows this, and that his GPS location shows he's driving around delivering food. What are they going to do now?
Well, they've already said what they're going to do, and they actually said it in their motion to answer the government. The government took this motion that they filed, where they basically exposed that there was a failed polygraph by this woman who was being investigated by the FBI. By the way, you can't have a defamation case if the FBI is actually investigating your client when my friend publishes a story about it.
How are you in a defamation case if you're a journalist saying this person may be involved? You learn the FBI called him in and drug him in and said they failed the test. Did you do it? I mean, that's like...
And they not only did that, they did it 2 days before his piece was released. So he was on the ball. He was following down logical investigative leads that the FBI was doing the exact same thing. That's the big piece. What happened next is really wild. Alex, there was a form that was filed that was document number 59 in the case. And that was the government essentially came out and said, the defense has found themselves in contempt of court. They have violated the gag order on this case. They have shared sensitive information illegally against the ruling of the judge, and they are now in contempt of court. They've done so intentionally. They've done so in order to cause a press splash. They've gone so and caused
so
a real problem.
They tried
and they've
to
threatened
intimidate
lives.
Everybody off the case. It didn't work. Where does it go next? Give us
okay,
a big
here's,
picture.
Here's where it gets really wild. Okay, they tried to shut it down with this contempt order. The defense said, fine, we're going to withdraw our motion. We're going to file it again under seal. That's what they did. So it's currently under seal, even though we have copies of it, because once it's on the internet, it's forever. Then the defense filed document number 66, and document number 66 is freaking wild. They said, we did this in good faith. We went out there and we made like simple allegations that we would like to consider that we are going to present an alternate theory of the crime. This is like Perry Mason stuff. What they said is, we'd like to be able to investigate and present to a jury at trial, and we're going to need some information. We need all the subpoena results. We want the video footage of her and her dog that you claim was a thing. By the way, I was told in a letter, which you have on your desk, where I actually just picked it up, that letter from Shawnee Kirkhoff's defense attorneys claims that there's video of her hanging out with her dog. We find out in these response documents that there is no video of her with her dog. There's a video of her dog, and allegedly her voice is off screen on that, which is wild. Okay. And this all goes back to Bongino in a second as well, because Bongino got himself involved in a pissing match with Tom Massey, who's also involved. Now, the document 59 was the order or claim that there was contempt. The response to it by Brian Cole Jr.'s defense attorneys, not only did they say, we did this in good faith, we're doing everything we can in the order we did, they said that they had a conversation. It's on page 8 of 9, if you guys want to look at the bottom of it. And this is the craziest thing that has maybe come out as this thing gets crazier and crazier. First, we learned Shawnee Kirkhoff was an actual person of interest. Second, we learned she failed a polygraph. Third, we learned they arrested another guy and they opened a case on him out of nowhere, and their case is garbage. And then you find this. I'm going to read it directly from the document. Notably, when defense counsel, so that's Brian Cole's counsel, was specifically asked in the motion, you know, what is sensitive material? The government could not point to any specific part of paragraph 4 from the gag order. People can watch my podcast this morning. I went into it in great detail. When further pressed by defense counsel, the government eventually stated that the motion fell under one specific category of the protected order. This is the fourth paragraph of document number 12 from this case. It's section C. And they said, quote, identifying information, including true names. The defense counsel read the full sentence back to the government. Identifying information, including true names and photographs, they put it in italics to highlight it very specifically, regarding government agents who act in an undercover capacity with respect to this investigation. And I don't know whether the government is trying to imply that Shawnee Kirkhoff was a government agent who acted in an undercover capacity with respect to this implication or this investigation, which would be a freaking like enormous
bombshell. So you're
saying
it looks like they're using that she was in an official capacity now as the cover.
That's only one possibility. The other possibility is they're trying to do bad lawyering where they're saying, yes, we want to artificially expand paragraph 4C and include things, and we're trying to be disingenuous and we're arguing in bad faith. So there's one part that's like a lawyerly trick. There's another part that's an admission saying she's a government undercover agent.
So basically,
I don't know which
now
one is
this
true.
Is out of control, off the rails. The next move is kill her.
I mean, the next move is they said that she was threatened, that she had people already threaten her. I actually sent you guys the Joe Hanneman tweet. And we can show the email that she apparently got anonymous emails from this resender out of Russia. By the way, I've gotten threats from there. I think Owen has as well, and I think you have as well. This is this Russian emailer service that will allow you to hide your identity. And it was a threat saying, I'm on my way to Shawnee Kirkhoff's house right now, and I'm going to go out there and execute her. I'm going to shoot her because she's a glowy or some nonsense. And so they're already giving you the reason that the government is basically set up that the defense attorneys for Brian Cole, Steve Baker, Joe Hanneman, Kyle Serafin, probably Alex Jones as well. We're all the bad guys because we're talking about this story, which is of public interest.
Now it's our
and
fault.
Because we're
going to get her
it,
killed.
It's our fault. Yep. That's exactly what they're trying to argue. And this is absolutely unacceptable. We can't let it stand.
And then you got Bongino attacking Massey for even covering this and just flipping out everywhere.
Okay. Here's where it gets even wilder. And we can lead into the next hour with this one. The Bongino Massey thing, I don't think Dan Bongino knew under any circumstances that she failed that polygraph. I think he found out about Shawnee Kirkhoff's name on November the 8th when The Blaze published that story. And then on the 12th, when they opened the file to Brian Cole Jr., said explicitly to Tom Massey, Massey has told me, and he's published it online, that Bongino was going to personally bankroll the defamation lawsuit by Shawnee Kirkhoff against reporters and anybody that was involved in sharing this
story. But didn't they also threaten members of Massey's staff with indictment?
That's correct. All of it. And that was Bon Jovi.
Wow, a lot to remember here. Boy, they are scared. Wow, we got their ass. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.